You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I mean, it's like anything else. When we've had guys in the past who've had it or been in that situation where you got to go into protocols, there's a natural concern for the person. And that's basically where it ends. You know, the league is trying to do everything they can to, you know, keep individuals and teams safe. And, you know, there's just a natural concern for an individual.
The point guard goes down again here on today's emergency episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. I cover the Suns and the NBA for SB Nation as well as Dime Magazine, and you can follow me on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Most importantly, though, you can follow our show on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns, where you can do your best to make sense of this situation right along with me. I've been tweeting through it, as they say, and going to do my best to give you all of the things that are happening around this situation. Chris Paul on the health and safety protocol. He is expected to be on it for several days. Sounds like he genuinely does have COVID. John Gambadoro saying that he did test positive and it was not unlikely to be a false positive, seeing as how the expectation is that Chris Paul will actually miss time here. He will not be allowed to be around the team. So you heard from Monty Williams there. I wanted to just give you sort of the rest of the context here as we make our way through the situation. Today's bonus show is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It is only worth it if you enjoy it. And let's, with that, get to more on Chris Paul. I did just talk to Cam Cox of 12 News yesterday, kind of praising Chris Paul and talking up how important he is. I think that episode obviously still holds up because, look, the reality is that this guy is, his value is only coming into greater clarity while we think about what might happen without him. So that is where we are. Check that episode out if you have not already. There's no reason not to. It's not moot solely because Paul is now in this protocol. The Suns have said they will provide a new update on Paul's health on Saturday. Monty Williams was hesitant to say much of anything regarding the specifics of the health, you know, anything else. However, Monty did say that, you know, he at one point referred to having it or being in the protocol. I don't, you know, not to just latch on to words, but that he did say having it first. And again, that's backed up by the fact that if it was just a false positive, that he just would be able to test negative a few times and get right back to it. So it does appear that he has, you know, diagnosed COVID, maybe some symptoms. On that note, though, Chris Paul did get vaccinated in February along with the rest of the team, according to John Gambadoro of Arizona Sports. Once again, shout out to Gambo for being on this story. Aside from that, you know, I think the obvious thing to say is, you know, I did see some people. We were on Spotify Green Room right before this. The full Locked On group was over there, and I had some people in the chat who were kind of confused, like, didn't he get vaccinated? What does that mean? Well, of course, you can still get COVID. The idea just being that it is less significant, less scary, less dangerous for you if you have been vaccinated. So that's likely what we're dealing with. Monty Williams, of course, as you heard, expressed just like some general, you know, obviously you don't want anybody to get this thing and you don't know what's going to happen, even if it is been protected. So that's where we are. Another thing on that note, though, is per the NBA health and safety guidelines that were updated as the vaccine rollout began around the country, players who have been vaccinated are not subject to quarantine just solely if there is exposure to COVID. So a lot of people were talking about, you know, he was up in the stands after the sweep in Denver with his father and others. You know, could that have been the problem? Or even the airport celebration when Chris had his window down, could those have been deemed dangerous activities? The answer to that, most as far as I'm able to glean, is no. It is not really related. There would be no reason to have to be on the protocol or be subject to a quarantine because of the vaccination status. So again, similar to what happened with LeBron James, where he was vaccinated, it basically come to find out and the exposure was not deemed to be such that he would need to sit out, nor did he ever test positive. So some similarities to that situation, the obvious difference being we know that Chris has tested positive and seems to be sick. So that's where we are from a health standpoint. Obviously, the Jazz Clippers series is still going on, so I want to hit on that side of things. We have an update with Kawhi Leonard and Mike Conley both. Let's just take a really quick break, folks, and then I'll be back on the other side. So on top of Chris Paul, who waking up this morning to the news that he was on the health and safety protocol was not what I thought would happen on my Wednesday. I don't think many of you expected it either. We also quickly thereafter got an update on Kawhi Leonard from a what looked to be fairly harmless bump of the knee with Joe Ingles on a fast break attempt in game four between the Jazz and the Clippers. Ended up being a legitimate injury, one that he's likely to miss game five as a result of, and potentially the rest of the series, if not longer. Came out later from, I believe, Shams Charania that injury is believed to be related to an ACL, not necessarily a tear, could be a sprain or another related injury. It's hard to say. That has not been officially announced yet. However, on top of that, we also, I mean, of course, so just first, the idea being here, Kawhi Leonard has had knee injuries there in the past. And like, you know, as a Suns fan, I'm sure a lot of you are listening thinking, well, to hell with it, the Suns have gotten their share of bad luck, whether it's Amare or the suspensions in 2007 or any other number of situations in the past. And yeah, there is, I just went off on that, right? I if you listened to yesterday's episode, you know that I was advocating for no asterisk on this season. And that's still where I am to be sure. But just when it comes to Kawhi, it's upsetting. This guy has dealt with knee tendinopathy and all these things, both sides of his body now. One of them likely seems to be a result of overcompensation. He's just dealt with this and has been this load management guy, and we've seen him come to the peak of his powers the past few seasons in the postseason, and it appears that he was rounding into that form and is now going to be potentially out for the series, if not longer. It's very, very disappointing. However, on the other side of this thing, Mike Conley still out, missing game five. It got a little bit lost because of everything else, but the quote, courtesy of Tim McMahon over at ESPN, was from Conley: "I had been pushing really hard to play earlier in the series and had a small setback related to the hamstring during that process. This is why it's been extended a little bit longer than I know we all would like. Obviously, if I could play, I would play." Conley went on to add, per Tim McMahon, that he believes it's still possible that he could play this series, but could be possible during the series is obviously ugly. Jazz have been playing excellently without him. It's the luxury of having Joe Ingles, who's a, you know, point wing who can defend and shoot threes and all that, coming off the bench, not to mention Jordan Clarkson, the actual Sixth Man of the Year winner. So I don't think it makes me any less scared of the Jazz that Conley remains out, because frankly, they've been without him for many, many weeks now, in and out of the lineup. So I don't necessarily know if that changes much in the series. And the reality is that we saw the odds around every website, every book, basically saying the Jazz odds go up and the Suns and Clippers go down, which makes sense because even though Conley remains out, he just hasn't been a massive ingredient basically since the All-Star break, it feels like. So them winning without him would surprise nobody. So I think if you're stacking it all up, if Paul were to miss a couple of games, especially, you know, the other thing to keep in mind here when we're thinking about the other side of the Western bracket is if the Jazz were to emerge from their series, that, of course, means they would host, they would be the home team in the conference finals, and a potential missed Chris Paul game sounds, you know, would come on the road in Salt Lake City. So, you know, whether Conley plays then, if he's healthy enough, it seems like he will still be battling some pain and injury management at that point, even if he does suit up, and Chris Paul could be on the sidelines during a road game one, possibly game two. So the thing to watch there clearly is if the Jazz can make short work of the Clippers or if the Clippers prolong this series. You're going to be relying on a heavy dose of Chris Paul, or of Paul George rather, for the Clippers. But if this thing wraps up early, game one could be as soon as Sunday, which would give the Suns less time, of course. I mean, that's obvious. And game one could be as late as Tuesday if this series were to go seven between the Jazz and the Clippers. So I guess by short work there, I really just mean, can the Jazz win it in six on the road, or do they potentially, I guess the Clippers could win it at home in six, and that would be similar. It seems to me like the Jazz are the favorites right now, and that would mean Chris Paul could get 6 days of rest, or of waiting, I guess, more likely, if this series were to go seven. So just some things to keep an eye out for there, and every team will be hampered regardless of what is left here. And I'm still wrapping my mind around the idea of why the Suns would wait until Saturday for their next update. That's 4 days from now. Oh, actually, it's 3 days from now. So maybe there is something in the deep in the protocols that I'm not familiar with that basically etches out why it would be 3 days. Maybe that's, you know, the number of consecutive negative tests he would need to have. I'm not exactly sure. These guys get tested every day, so this is not a matter of, they get, I believe, twice. So this is not a matter of they caught it late and he could already be recovering. I don't know exactly why. Maybe they just want to buy themselves some time and just picked a day kind of out of obscurity. You know, if game one was to be Sunday, that would be their last practice day. So that might be why. But we are obviously still making our way through all of this, and we'll have to see what's going to happen, what the next status for Chris Paul will be, and whether he will be available, and when game one will be. So I wish I had more answers. I don't necessarily. I did want to just get out of here quickly, though, first with you guys, letting you know what I think could be the ripple effects of Chris Paul potentially missing a game. You'll hear from Monty Williams about campaign, who I asked him about at our media availability today, and a little bit more on the rotation coming out of our quick break. Hey, Monty, just understanding that there's not much else to say about Chris, but just generally speaking, is there anything different that campaign needs to do this week in terms of preparation, just with the potential that he'll have to take on more, or is it he's been part of your rotation and it's going to be a pretty similar week for him?
I think the week will be fine. As I said, we don't know what's going to happen, but you know, Cam has played with the starters a lot this year, so it's not anything that he hasn't done or he's not used to. So that part won't change.
So clearly, if Chris Paul were to miss game one, Cameron Payne would step in and start. I don't really see another version of things. Devin Booker has been such an expert operating off the ball. They use him to create space, to attack the weak side of initial action. They do so many things with Booker off of the ball that I just don't see them going, you know, point book or this type of setup that we had all dreamt of maybe a few years ago when he was toiling around with nobody's on the rest of the roster. I just don't think that's the best way to win. So what we're likely going to see instead is campaign there. And you just heard from Monty Williams. He trusts Payne. I mean, like, you heard it from Monty, and everyone who's watched this team would know, Payne has played with Paul and with Booker and with the rest of this starting lineup, plenty. I mean, I think back all the way to the beginning of training camp when we were all wondering whether Payne could keep up his bubble performance, and I asked Monty what he was looking for from Payne, or if we might see Booker as the backup point guard, all these different sort of opportunities and options presented to the coaching staff, and he said, you know, straight away that he liked the pace that Payne played with. He liked especially the ability that Payne had with his, you know, drive and kick game to set up not only Ayton for rim attempts, but also to create threes in a similar way that Chris Paul does. So they like what Payne is able to do for them. And I think it's pretty obvious that he's more than up to the task just as far as intelligence and efficiency and mettle, frankly. He's been one of the hearts of this team, the heartbeats of this team, all playoffs long. He has not been afraid. This guy was attacking Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Marc Gasol, Nikola Jokic. No matter who was on him, I think we can trust that he will score and create, and he can defend. So, you know, whether that matchup would be probably Mike Conley in an occasion where Paul doesn't play and Conley does, maybe if the Conley situation looms still, then, or lingers still, we could see Payne defending Donovan Mitchell at times. So I don't think anyone should underestimate him. Monty clearly believes in him and is operating with every ounce of trust that he could get the job done if he was pressed into action. Aside from that, though, just a few quick thoughts. I would imagine Etuan Moore would be on the floor in a rotation role for a potential game without Chris Paul. We've seen that throughout the playoffs where the times when in the second half of game one, I believe, against the Lakers, when Paul had that injury, we saw Moore. I believe maybe at least one other game. I believe it was a home game. We saw Moore when Paul was unable to play at moments. I just think Monty trusts him as an engine for the offense. Just something as simple as, you know, getting to the ball to Booker off of a screen, getting the ball to Ayton in the post or on a lob, things like that, where he just is a more trustworthy player than somebody like Javon Carter to set up the offense. And again, I don't think they really want Booker to be in that type of situation. Now, if Moore's minutes go poorly, if the Jazz are able to attack him, if they just don't respect him as a scorer and things get ugly, I do think Booker would be the next most likely. Javon Carter, guys, is just not a point guard. He just isn't. He never has been. He was never good in a role like that. It is no coincidence that his best moments have come either playing next to Devin Booker or next to campaign. He was rarely ever out there asked to create, and when he was, it never has gone well. So I'm sorry, I just don't see that. Maybe he gets some action defending Donovan Mitchell. I don't necessarily know. I think there's obviously options. We know Langston Galloway could play, but I think the plan A will be Etuan Moore backing up campaign, probably playing very few minutes. I would imagine we would see heavy minutes for both Payne and Booker in that event, and plan B would be Booker as more of a secondary playmaker, backup point guard guy behind Payne if Moore's minutes do not go well. Now, at the end of the day, I want to hit that because I want you guys to know what I expect, but the reality is Monty, frankly, did not seem terribly worried, very much sort of kicking the can down the road. Let's see what happens. It doesn't appear to me that he's terribly concerned with the idea of Paul missing a game. I'm just trying to read between the lines. He did not seem down about much of anything when we spoke with him. He didn't want to comment on it because he just has not done that all season, but he also did not come across as a guy who's without his star for a whole series or anything like that. So that's where I see this, and I expect kind of a, I don't know, maybe 50, 55, 60% chance that Paul does play just based on it. And of course that goes up if game one is not until Tuesday. That would give him 6 days. I mean, look, I had COVID. I was probably in a situation symptom-free even without being vaccinated where I would have tested negative a few days in. I don't mean to make small of the disease. It's obviously a freaky fluke that Paul would get it after having been vaccinated, but that was my experience. We've seen it very similarly with many, and the fact that he is vaccinated makes him less under less harsh rules from the NBA. So don't hang your head, please, folks, and don't be too down about this. I'll be back with you on Wednesday night, getting you a recap of game 5 between the Clippers and the Jazz, a little bit more on what that series is looking like, and likely some more craziness. We haven't even talked about the coaching or the GM or the downfall of the Mavs post Luka Doncic draft. Plenty to talk about. You might get some NBA philosophizing if you, is that even the right word? I hope it is. Philosophizing? Yeah, that sounds right. So stay tuned, subscribe wherever you listen. Enjoy this bonus pod. I hope you did. And I'll be back with you in just a short while.